This is an interview with Lucille Barrett at her home at 42 Louise Avenue in Lewiston, Maine on June 23rd, 2005. And this is Andrea Lungia. This is an interview for the Millworkers Oral History Project. Lucille, could you start just by giving me your full name, including your maiden name?
Oh, God. Lucille Gassungay Blair Barrett. My first husband passed away, so I worked in the mill for a long time on Blair, Lucille Blair, and then I married, and my name became Barrett.
Is Blair B-L-A-I-S?
Right.
Yes. And so, when and where were you born?
I was born in Lewiston, on River Street in Lewiston.
And your birth date?
4/20/25. I'm 80 years old.
And did you grow up in that area of Lewiston?
Yes, I did. They call it what they call Little Canada?
Yes.
That's the area where I was born, I was raised, and I married there. I lived there until, was it 50 years ago I moved here?
Oh, wow.
We built this house here and I moved here.
Oh, you built, you and your husband?
Not my husband. My brother did.
Brother.
My brother built this house. But that was 50 years ago, 1955. Yeah. So I've been here 50 years. So I started working at Bates in 1952. That was what, 53 years ago.
Yeah.
53 years ago, yeah, but I stopped about 3 or 4 years ago, when they closed down. Anyway, I was there until they closed down. Because I retired in 1990, I was 65, and I said, this is it. You know, my 40 hours a week, and then I stopped, and then a year or so later, they asked me to go back. They closed down the area where I was working. I was a stitcher, and they closed down the finishing room. And being a stitcher, I guess I retired, and 6 months later, they closed down the area. And then I guess they decided they wanted samples, and there was nobody there, so they called me. And I went in to do a few samples, and then later on, this lady, they started picking up business. They started needing stitchers. So then this lady was sick, so they called me in again. So I replaced this one, and then I replaced that one, and then I go home, and I worked for two weeks, and I was out, and then out for 2 or 3 months. Then I was back in again, and anyway, I worked until it was 1995.
Wow.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So it was great, you know. Yeah. I didn't mind it. You know, if it's something you learn when you get old, it's hard. But if you've done it all your life, it comes so easy. It's just a repeat of what you've been doing all your life.
Yeah.
So I worked there for about 50 years. I stitched about maybe 48 years. I was a stitcher on bedspread.
Wow.
I loved it. I enjoyed it. And I was better using my hands than I was with my head.
Can you tell me what Little Canada was like during the days you grew up there?
Oh, it was very, I would say, congested. There were so many people there. There were apartment buildings, and some of these apartments had four apartments, you know, four families, and some of them had 8 and even 12 families would live. And it was so, you know, one house next to the other. Everything was so close by that 5 or 10 feet between the buildings. So it was very dangerous for a fire hazard. They were very afraid of fires in that area because it was so congested, you know, so many people living there. But they were all friendly people, and I'd say 99% of the people were French.
Yeah.
They were all French-Canadian, come from Canada. Most of them were working in the mill. They worked at Bates, the Hill, the Androscoggin, the Bates, you know, all these mills around town. A little, maybe 10 or 20% worked in the shoe shops, but it was mostly a mill town. It was people working in the mill. I mean, the money wasn't that good, but it was steady. You know, very, very few layoffs, and people stuck to it. So it was a good life. I enjoyed it, really, and you enjoyed it. You knew all the neighbors, and people very, very friendly. We talked one another, and we knew everyone, and I guess I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Your parents, did they both come from Lewiston or
Canada? No, Canada. My parents came from Canada, way down Quebec, way down. Where they call it Rivière-du-Loup, close by in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Way back when. Oh, my mother would be over 100 and, oh, God, 17. I think she'd be 117, and my father would be 121 years old. So that was quite a family. We were a large family, anyway.
How many children were there?
There was 9 of us. So I was one of the last. I had a brother younger than I was, but So, but I had a brother, the oldest brother, and the other one worked in the mill. And the others were in the two, I had two sisters that worked in the shoe shop. And then they went in the service. Coming back from the service, well, one was an electrician, one was a carpenter. And I guess I started working in the, I went to high school, and when I come out, I was working in the office, but there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was the matter. I could not, I had a hard time to type my shorthand. Yeah. The moment that she'd say go, I'd start shaking, and I couldn't keep my hands on the board, so I mainly passed it, but, you know, it's ironic, never knowing what it was then. Yeah. But it didn't stop me from stitching, though. I mean, no, you know. So I enjoyed that, using my hands where I could do it, so I did well.
Did your father work in the mills?
Yes, and then he had an accident, and then he became an insurance agent. My mother never worked.
With nine kids?
Nine kids.
That was work, wasn't it?
At the time, yes, it was, especially without, you know, they didn't have too much facilities or anything, gadget to work with as you do today. But great, we had a good family. My father died young. My father was in his 60s when he died. And my mother died, she was in the 84. She was 84, but she died of an accident. I think she could have lived longer. Mm-hmm. She had died. So, that's the name of the game.
Tell me about being a stitcher in the mill. And how did you get your job there? Because your brothers were there, or?
No, I just, at the time I had worked at the Andrew Scoggin Mill in the office for 2 years, and then I said, the heck with that, I want where the money is, and stitching was a piecework worker, so I went in base, I applied at base, and I got in right off, and they gave me as a general hand for a few months, and then I went on stitching. That's where the money was, and at the time we had built this house, so we needed the money. And I stayed there. I thought I would be there for a few years, but God, I stayed until I was 75. Yeah. God, it's just a long life, isn't it? But, you know, what kept me going is I started, after I retired, I started going to the Y. I go swimming every morning. Mm. I'm in the Y at 5:45 in the morning, I'm in the pool. I love it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, being at the mills, were there social groups that you developed?
The union was. And I think I lost my first husband in 1971. Mm-hmm. And naturally, I got involved with the union. It was a, you know, way out. I needed something to keep me busy. So at the time, I had two girls gone. I had two girls who were married, but then I had two more at home. And I decided to start, you know, working for the union as a shop steward. Then I got to be secretary, and then I got to be president. So I was president for 10 years. I enjoyed it, really. It was great.
What were some of the issues that you had to work with during that time?
Well, you know, most of the issues would be seniority rights. Mm-hmm. You know, people, I mean, sometimes they'd give a job to somebody that was a junior just came in, and then they give them the best jobs, and naturally the older people that have been in, they wanted their turn. Hey, I'm, you know, I got seniority and I should be entitled to that job. So you used to, it was more like, crazy as it may sound, it was more like a lawyer. You were there as a shop steward defending people that couldn't defend themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you'd say, well, hey, you go to the office and say, well, this person was here first and I don't see why you don't give him a chance to get that on that job, or, you know, or, I know, little odd jobs, and sometimes fights in between two people that they didn't agree. That was hard. You know, you had two members, so it's one had to be right, and the other one had to be wrong. So you didn't favor either one of them, but when the outcome would come out, you know, it was one was right anyway, so the other one would be, in other words, bitching against you because you didn't help her out. But it was mostly, especially I was in the finishing room, and it was mostly women. There were 90% of the people in that room was all women, and sometimes there was a little envy or resentment, a little here and there, but I mean, it wasn't union duty. Union duty was more to take care of the work, you know, work, or else somebody would be assigned more than 100% of a job. Mm-hmm. So then you'd go in and they'd say, hey, she's got too much work, and fair play about who was going to get the good work and the bad work, and who was dividing the work, and Mostly, that's it. Or somebody didn't get paid for a holiday, and then you'd have to go in and say, how come she didn't get paid, and what the reason for. And sometimes, you know, it was right, but you had to be fair play. You just didn't say for the people. Say every time the people were right, sometimes the people weren't right. But you had to make them see that they were not, and that was the hardest part. But another thing, you couldn't bear down on the company too much, because if you did, you could close down the place. So you had to be fair-minded, and like pollution. People complain about pollution. Naturally, there's an awful lot of lint. Being a textile mill, there was an awful lot of lint, and they complain about the lint. But you could do so much, but you can do too much where it would cause the company too much that their profit would just go down the drain. Another thing I think that did close down these mills was that workman's comp. People would have, you know, carpal tunnel or any of these injuries, and they'd sue, or... And the company was, you know, at a loss all the time. I was told once, that the president told me once that from January until April 1st, all the money that they had profit that they made in these 3 months went to workman's comp because of all the cases they had. And at the time, for a while, I guess, we had 3 cases of AIDS. And they were not supposed to say anything, but I remember at one meeting, the president started to say something, and he says, yeah, our cost has gone up because we have 3 cases of AIDS. And then he took back, I guess he wasn't supposed to say anything, but I picked that up right off. Yeah. And he says it was expensive. This, you know, the premiums went go sky high, and what else can you do? Mm. They had a good insurance program, though, really.
Yeah,
for a while they had Union Mutual, and they paid pretty well. Yeah. But otherwise it was a good time.
Yeah.
I had good work. I loved it, really. I really enjoyed it. Oh, some days were bad, like everything else. Yeah. You work with a machine. Sometimes the machine works and sometimes it don't work. I mean, you're not bucking with people. You're bucking with a machine. And, you know, it went pretty good. All in all, I can't complain. I had a good time. It was a good time.
So all your years were at the Bates Mill?
From 1952 until 1995. Yep.
Were there sports teams at the mill?
At the time, a little bit, I guess. They used to have a baseball club, I guess, and then they had
hockey.
They had hockey, and then they had bowling. They had bowling clubs. I did for a while, and then I stopped. Naturally, I was working on the second shift at first when I went in, so it was hard for me to join, but for a while I did some bowling, and then all of a sudden they dropped out. Not enough people signed for it, so they had to drop it. But as far as they had hockey, I know they had hockey and they had baseball. Otherwise than that, I don't think there was much of anything else, not to my knowledge.
Did you work with any other union representatives that represented different areas of the mill?
Oh, yeah, I had... There was a fellow, the business agent was Mr. Denny Blay.
Denny Blay.
You know Denny Blay, yeah. He was district, not only district manager, he was vice president of the union at the end. But then I worked with him, and there was another fellow that maybe you should contact, was Roland Gosselin. He was very involved with the he was a business agent for a while. He was business agent for, basically, and once I was offered the job of being business agent, but at the time I had 2 kids at home. I had one 14 and 16, and it was too much going out of town. I had 2 girls that were married, but the other 2 were too young to really be off and on. 14 and 16, it's the stage you got to watch out on them. The girl wasn't bad, but a little boy gave me headaches. Boys do anyway, you know, on bicycles and dirt bike and whatever, cars and whatever. But, oh no, it went pretty good.
Yeah.
Can't complain, had a good life.
Did you have any interactions with Louis Jalbert over the years?
Not too much, except we used to be in that, in politics. We were in politics, I guess, yes. What the heck did they call it? I was involved a little bit in politics. It was mostly in Lewiston, though. I didn't go too far with them. But it was mostly when they had elections, we used to be in front of the mill with whoever was there, Curtis, or I was there with
Muskie,
Curtis, and what you may call the Democrats, because I'm a strong Democrat. And I remember once, I guess one of the
personal director, Mark, what was his name, Mark Bernier, I guess he wanted to play a joke on me. He came in with Olympia Snow, and he says, "You want to take a picture with Mrs. at the time, she's a Mrs. Snow." And I said, "Yes, but I don't want to be in the newspaper. Whatever you do, I'm a Democrat, and I know she's a Republican, and, you know, I'll be in hot water with the union if I go through with this." I said, "I don't mind her taking pictures, but I don't want my picture in the newspaper." It was a little embarrassing, but still, I felt, you know, it was one way or another, down if you do and down if you don't. So I've always been a very strong Democrat, and we used to have rallies, and we, you know, pass leaflets or go around and be on the phone, banks, and, you know, calling people to go vote, and, very involved into, what they call it, can't remember what it was, but it was politics anyway, political action committee anyway, whatever. Yeah, I was involved in that. I enjoyed that, too. And there was quite a few people now, but they're all gone. They're all dead. Mm. They're all gone. It's so sad. I had Rose Gilman that was there for years as president. She's gone. There was Julian Clucci that was there. He's gone. There was a good friend of mine, Priscilla Chassie. She's gone. And Lionel Langua, he's gone. You know, all these people, I can't believe everybody's gone. Yeah. Because it was so great. And we used to go to convention, you know, with the union, with the international. We'd go to... I went to Washington, D.C., I went to San Francisco, and I went to Florida and Boston, New York, Detroit. Great. You meet an awful lot of people. And you know, the best part of it, which I saw, it was very integrated. You'd go there, there'd be just as many blacks as there were white, and, you know, it was just nice. Because in Lewiston, there's not too many black people. But now there were the civilians, yes. I mean, there's quite a mixture. But at the time, there wasn't. And in the mill, there were very, very few black people working in the mill. They were all white people. The majority were French. Now and then you meet an Irishman, but not too many.
Yeah.
It was mostly French.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. French-speaking, too. Yeah. And even today, my husband doesn't speak French at all, but I do, and I'll be in the pool, and I'll be talking to this one, and I'm in English, and then all of a sudden I turn French, and I turn, and I, and this man, that used to be a teacher, he said, "I don't understand any of you people." He said, you switch from one to another without even, you don't even know you're doing it. And I said, which is true, very true, but the name of the game.
That's me.
You're born French, and I guess you stay with it until you die.
Yeah.
So, that's it, huh?
Well, when you lived in Little Canada, did the people walk to the mills?
Everybody walked. There was very few cars. Yeah. And you know, this is the reason today they have so many problems with alcohol. Because in those days, everybody walked. You went to church, you went to work, you went to school, everybody walked. And even when you got to be a teenager or you went to dances, you walked. Even though sometimes you'd be, you know, in the 20s and you'd have a cocktail or two, maybe two, you'd walk back home, so there's no problem. But today, that's what it is, the liquor. They drive and they get into accidents. But in those days, everybody walked. Very few people in my days had cars. Very few. I think I was in my 30s before we had a car. I think when we moved here, I guess I started driving. Before that, I wouldn't drive. There was no cars.
Yeah.
But working in the mill, it wasn't that much money, but eventually you could afford a car.
Yeah. And did you have, in that Little Canada area, did they have shops for groceries and things?
Quite a few, yeah. There was a next door to us, they had a shop, which was mostly a general store. And, on River Street, which is the first street next to the river, and they had a store on one street, and then they had another one on Oxford Street, and then they had another one on Lincoln Street. But there were little stores, and you know, I closed them down, the supermarket. The moment the supermarket opened up, you know, those large stores, they closed these places down. But it was nice because it was close by, but a little more expensive than you would when you went to the supermarket. Naturally, when they started coming in with, you know, lower prices, that people went to the market, and these places were forced to close down. You know, yeah, right next door to us. But it was nice, but at the time we were so poor, we couldn't afford to go. You know, you didn't have no 10 cents or a quarter to go buy candy or anything. Yeah. We didn't have that money in those days.
Yeah.
But today it's not a quarter, it's a dollar. Huh? Today kids, they want a dollar. They don't want 10 cents, they want a dollar, $5. The name of the game.
Yeah.
That's it.
Did Did your dad ever talk about his time working in the mill before he went?
Not much, no. Never said too much. Because I think he must have stopped before I was born. So very early. Because I don't recall him mentioning it all. He was a loom fixer, as far as I knew. But as far as talking in the mill. But I had a brother that was a loom fixer. And the other one used to work in the card room at Bates. They were both were at Bates. But my sisters work in the shoe shop.
Yeah. Did they like their jobs, your brothers? Did they?
To tell you the truth, that's what my daughter will ask me sometimes. Did you enjoy working? I said, if you wanted the mighty dollar, you had to work. Whether you liked your job or you didn't like it, you had to work in order to get money. And the problem was you wanted money to get the whatever you wanted out of life. You wanted a house, you wanted a car, you had to work. Whether you enjoy your job or not, you enjoyed your work. You had to work for a dollar. Well, at the time it was, honest, I got 20 cents and 25 cents an hour. And but you needed the money in order to get anything out of life. So, but today they choose what they want to do. And they don't like this, they drop this, or they, which is good. Good. Might as well, if you're going to work all your life, might as well enjoy what you're doing. But it's not everybody that did it, though. Many people I know mainly say, well, I was rich, I would never work in here. And to each his own. Yeah. To each his own.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about working in the mills or growing up in Lewiston?
You know, the best thing I think that they did improve in their workman's comp, you know, there were many accidents. Before there were many accidents and there were many things that were in the mill that the union would force them into, taking care of the people, make sure there was enough air coming in, or make sure that the floors were fixed and the bathrooms were clean, and, you know, make it a little more comfortable for the people working in there, whatever. I think there was an awful lot of improvement from the time I went in until I went out. They did an awful lot of improvement. So, and OSHA was around anyway, so anybody that didn't like it, they were all afraid they'd be reported, so... I think the company did their best to really, really picked it up. And one man that's been there for years and years and years, you must have heard, what's his name? Fred LaBelle.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Fred LaBelle?
Yeah.
Good buddy of mine. I worked with him for years, and very nice Joe. Very nice Joe. I really got along well with him. Very nice. But at the time, I think when I went into Bates in 1952, there was about 2,500 people working there. And when I left, there was about five.
500?
Five people.
Oh, five people. You were at the very, very end.
Yeah. I replaced until the end.
Were there big shutdowns, or is it just gradual closing?
No, they had quite a few shutdowns. I guess I remember way back, I was laid off a couple of times. Once I was out for about, maybe 7 months, 8 months, I guess. They had shut down. They did. That was in 1960 when my daughter was born, in 1960. I was out for about 8 months, I guess. And then I was out again another time, I think 3 years later, 63, maybe for a couple of months. And then I had enough seniority. You know, they went by seniority.
Yeah.
If it was a on a job, people with seniority. Either, you know, the longest stay that you were there, you had your seniority to stay on the job, so they start by the youngest and up the ladder. So by the time, by 1963, I had accumulated enough seniority to stay. I wasn't laid off after that, no. So, but I enjoyed these. Really. Collecting unemployment without working, it was great. But it didn't pay though, you didn't collect that much, though. In those years, I think you collected maybe $20, $25. So you didn't go far with $25 in those days. But things were cheaper than they are today. Today, everything's so expensive. And you know, the saddest part is you worked and you collected Social Security, but you work when the wages are so low that you can't get that much out of Social Security because your amount isn't that great. So, you know, today wages are sky high, so you get a better unemployment, although I think they're up to $200 or $225 a week, which is good. We worked all that week for that, 40 hours and then some. Even during the war in 1943, I worked there when I was in high school, worked there in the summertime.
How old were you?
16, 17. But yeah, that was during the war. They wanted people. You know, the war was from 1941 until 45. So at the time, Bates Mill was making, what was it, making sheets for the hospital. You know, those crinkled sheets, white sheets for the hospital. And I guess that they were working 7 days a week at the time because of the war. You know, they needed the material. And
they were short of
short people? People, definitely. Yeah. So many people gone into the service, yes. Those were the days. I remember the war, so then I hated this one going on. I'm against this Iraqi war. Oh, I was against it from 100% from the beginning. So you got to take what is. But, you know, after seeing all these people coming home, these veterans coming home and being sick and being in togas and, you know, they're crippled, they're handicapped. There's so many. I couldn't see the war there. The war is not the answer. Diplomacy is. You got a big mouth, you can use it. Right?
Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's all? Our Englishmen that would run the city, but then all of a sudden, I think, first of all, I knew there were Frenchmen getting to be mayor and aldermen. And,
is this in the 50s?
Or? Yeah, in the 50s, I think so, yeah. In the 50s, you started having a little more of these French people getting involved. Like today, you have Michaud that's in Congress, which is quite a... Quite a thrill to see him up there, really.
Do you recall Ernest Mallinckrodt?
Yeah, oh yeah, he was mayor of the city of Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, people used to laugh at him because his English was very poor. And he had a hard time expressing himself. But he was outspoken, which was great. Whenever he'd see anything done in City Hall that he didn't like, he'd come out with it. Whether he spoke good English or not, he'd let him have it. And people resented the fact that he wasn't representing the city as a speaker because he didn't have the power of speech, but by the same token, he was outspoken. Whenever he saw that was wrong, he would speak up, and people enjoyed it. They voted for him. So I guess, I enjoyed him. I wasn't too old at the time, but I enjoyed him because whatever he said was great.
Yeah. Now, there was a newspaper, a French newspaper, Le Messager.
Yes. You know, as a young girl, I used to love it because my parents and my mother didn't speak a word of English. My father had studied English to become naturalized in the 1920s. And so they always had that newspaper coming in every day, which was great because you picked up your French and you stayed with it. Mm-hmm. You know, because you'd read it every day and whatever it was, you kept it going. But then all of a sudden they folded up because lack of subscription. Mm-hmm. I guess it went down so bad that they had to stop it. But it was great. Another thing they had too was French was on Sunday they always had these programs, or on Saturday night they had these French program
on the radio,
yeah, on I can't remember whether it's WCOU or whatever it was, but they had a 2-hour program all in French, and on Sunday morning was the same way, they had these French programs, and even in the morning I remember going to high school and my mother would put the radio on and it was all French for about an hour. French songs, which is great.
Do you remember the gentleman Louis-Philippe Gagnier?
Yes, definitely.
Was he on the radio or the...
He was a reporter for the Le Messager.
Okay.
He worked for them. He used to have an article in the paper. They call it The Eye. And he was a reporter. He always had an article in the paper every day, which he spoke up. He was very outspoken too, but he was very good. Mm-hmm. He was outspoken and he was good for the city. He was mayor for a while and... Very good. Those were the days, my dear. And I've always been interested in politics or whoever's running or where their platform is or whether I, you know. And it's ironic because today, here I am, I raise up my kids, and I got a daughter that's very minded with more or less helping out people and being, you know, involved in people and programs. And I have a son that's more businesslike. We're there to make money. And here's just... How can they be raised together and have such a different viewpoint about life?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You don't make it. You do what you can, but name of the game. That's it.
Yeah. Anything else that you think we should have?
Put in? No. All I had, I had 3 daughters and 1 boy.
Thank you very much.